The following program is sponsored. The opinions and statements made by the host and guests do not necessarily reflect the views of WBOB or its parent company, the Chesapeake Portsmouth Broadcasting Corporation.
Van Wee Financial is a registered investment advisor. Information presented is for educational purposes only and does not intend to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. Investments involve risk and, unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Be sure to first consult with a qualified financial advisor and/or tax professional before implementing any strategy discussed herein.
All financial radio shows are created equal. Some call themselves financial shows, but in reality, they basically talk about politics and religion. We don't do that. We discuss finances, and we would really like to hear from you. So again, call the show, 222-8255. We're also the only father-son financial show in the area that we know of, and it makes us a little bit different.
You know what's kind of funny? Just driving in a few minutes ago, listening to Angela and Howard about team real estate, and it dawned on me that we have back-to-back teams here on the station, real estate and then finance, and it's exactly the same thing.
Yeah.
It just seemed like a tie that I hadn't actually put together before.
And they actually talk a lot about the economics of real estate, too, so it ties in real well with the show.
And the economics of teamwork.
Yeah, that, too. So we are both certified financial planners, and we have been in business for over 15 years combined. We are a registered investment advisor with the state of Florida, and so we deal with other people's money all the time. And it has been an interesting couple years, to say the least. The market has basically done nothing, gone nowhere, and it seems to be continuing that trend this week, wouldn't you say?
Everybody says the market is directionless, and I categorically disagree.
It's sideways.
Exactly.
That is a direction.
It's got a direction.
Exactly. So I'm going to talk a little bit about what did or did not happen this week in the market, and it's pretty much not very exciting. We look like we're going to have a pretty good week there Monday through Wednesday. Then Thursday came, it dropped, and it came back, and then Friday came, and we saw the first 100-point down day on the Dow for the first time in a month, I believe.
Mr. Market is very fickle.
Yeah, we did cross over 18,000 this week briefly, but once again, we just couldn't hold on to that level. The Dow ended the week actually up 0.3%, though, so not too bad.
Well, that's what keeps happening lately, that you get a mixed result every week, and you add them all up, and you get nothing.
Exactly.
So it goes back to our emphasis on dividends. That's the one thing they can't take away from you.
The S&P dropped just 0.1%, and the NASDAQ, which has been the most volatile index this year, finished down 1%. For the quarter, all three indexes are up, and for the year, only the NASDAQ is negative by 2.3%. Commodities had a nice run this week, which is nice, considering we thought that might happen last week. We discussed it. Oil actually peaked out at $51.67 before falling to close the week under $50. The ETF that tracks silver, SLV, gained 5.6% this week, and the ETF that tracks gold, GLD, rose 2.4%.
Fear.
Yeah,
those
definitely.
Those are fear purchases. I've been afraid for a long time, so I've been buying.
The commodities index tracked by the ETF PDBC rose 2.1%, so even the broad-based commodity market did pretty well. Although some of the construction-related commodities did not fare as well as gold and silver.
If you're looking at the short interest, the short sellers in certain areas, which I like to do in the morning, and if anybody's interested in the short side of the market, the free website is shortsqueeze.com. Type in any symbol and it'll tell you what the change for the recent period is in the amount of short. When you see the people covering their short sales, it means that they are now turning from bears into bulls on that. So if you type in GLD or SLV into there, that's the gold and silver. The short has gone down by about 14% for gold and 8% for silver. So we're not alone thinking that there's more upside in the metals.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. So despite the terrible employment reports last week, the initial jobless claims came in at a solid 264,000, which beat expectations and remains below the important 300,000 level. In addition, the Job Openings and Labor Turnover Survey, or JOLTS, reported that there are 5.8 million open jobs in this country right now, which is the highest level ever. So I'm seeing a little bit of a disconnect between subsequent reports. Much of the JOLTS report was similar to last month, including the quit rate, which shows how many people are leaving their jobs to take other jobs, hopefully better jobs. The quit rate came in at 2%. I'd personally like to see that number a little bit higher. I think that around 2.5% would signal that the market is really heating up in terms of jobs.
We're about halfway there in the private sector.
Close, but not quite there. One bright spot was that employees losing their jobs fell to 1.2%, which tied the lowest rate ever recorded. So no one's getting fired, basically.
That's because there's no talent out there that's willing to look for a job.
The overall tone of the report was pretty positive, which is a complete disconnect from the employment reports. We spoke about it last week, but I still believe that there's part of the economy that is, that we're just not capturing it. And I'm wondering if it's that younger people especially are working gigs now, where they sign up maybe in a employment contract for a certain amount of time, and then they go on to the next one and the next one, and it's not recorded as full-time work, but they're definitely making enough income to support themselves.
That's where the talent is. It's on the sidelines.
That's true, because it takes a certain kind of talented person to be able to land job after job. It's not an easy thing to do. You need to get referrals and stay connected with potential employers.
A lot of these people are home-based, too.
That is also true.
Which, if you've never tried it, folks, I gotta say it's the best thing ever. Not that I am, but being 5 minutes away from the office and having the option is a really nice thing.
Yeah, and I know several people that now work from home. It's actually been at least among my friend base, it's been a big trend.
Yeah, I've noticed it, especially in banking. There's a whole bunch of people who have been moved out of the bricks and mortar into their own home and set up with home office, and they're working for big banks doing all kinds of stuff around the world, literally.
Yeah, I wonder if that's the Amazon effect, just getting rid of the mortar and bricks and mortar and going to, it's a lot cheaper to house someone at a home office than it is in an office building downtown.
Yep.
So the other thing I wonder about is there are a large number of people in this country who just don't have any skills to do any job and therefore can't find work because the
participation rate.
Good point. Anyways, it is interesting because there is just such a huge disconnect between those reports. And you talk to any small business owner, they can't find enough good people. It's very strange. It makes no sense to me.
No, it's something we've been trying to analyze for a long time. Why are so many people retired? Even people at young ages are just not interested in joining the workforce.
Yeah, well, I guess that supports the number of Bernie Sanders voters out there, too.
I guess it does.
So we do have a trivia question today, and the question is, how many times has the Dow closed over 18,000 only to fall back below in subsequent trading days? This doesn't include intraday crosses, only when it closes.
I misunderestimated this one, folks. It's a pretty good number.
It is, and that's brought to you by Ken Bales with First Coast Alarm. His number is 636-7888. You're listening to the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Adam Van Wee.
I'm Steve Van Wee.
And you are listening to us. It is Saturday morning on the First Coast, and we have a rule on this show. Callers always go to the front of the line, so why don't we pick
correct.
It up?
After one quick announcement. At the bottom of the hour, I'm going to bring up my favorite public service announcement again about the Humane Society. And this week, it's got a nice little twist to it that you'll all want to hear. That said, Marshall, how are you?
Beach Boys, how y'all doing this morning?
Rocking and rolling, as they say.
I'm just traveling all my honeydews around town, doing my second favorite job on Saturday morning, and that's listening to the Beach Boys.
It's good. We like that habit.
I struck a sensitive chord there, Adam, on something that I really hadn't thought of before. In considering our Department of Labor has such a devil-in-the-details issue, let me make sure I understood what I heard you say. You were discussing the idea of some of the younger employees in the market not really being employees, being more contract, going from gig to gig.
Yeah, it's especially prevalent in the tech world, but it happens everywhere, but you'll see it mostly in tech. And these are really bright young people that are doing this, too.
You know, it's interesting to me. There's a lot of different businesses where people overstate their abilities and get hired into a job and then all of a sudden somebody realizes, wait a minute, this guy really can't do what he says he could do.
Peter Principle.
But people who are contract employees, I mean, they know if they don't do the job right, they're gone in a second.
Absolutely.
So, do I understand this, that the contract employees are not part of our employment numbers?
There's a catch in that one.
It's a really good question. And the fact is, you know, they work sometimes, but they don't work all the time. So it depends on, I guess, when the survey's taken, really, if they're working or not.
You won't pick that up in the employment, in the establishment survey. And you won't pick it up on ADP survey.
But
you will pick it up in the household. And this government has chosen to count you employed if you work 1 hour a month. So if you call the household when they're doing the household survey monthly, and if the guy says, yeah, I'm working right now, got a little contract to do, yes, they'll count it. But if you're in between, he's going to say no. So that's why sometimes you see a big divergence between the establishment survey and the household survey.
Well, thank you. That's, you know, once again, what is it? Figures don't lie, but liars figure.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we've had some of that. But, I really didn't think about it that much with much younger people. I have a niece who works in the insurance world. And everybody that works for her company is a contract employee that might be hired out for 6 months, for 10 months. Like, she had a job that she was supposed to help get the South Carolina insurance world connected with Obamacare from a state government standpoint.
And it's Obamacare causing this whole thing.
At the very least, adding to it.
Who'd made promises they could connect and do these things, and they signed up for big, 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 big contracts, and then they couldn't get it done, so they had to go find individual contractors who could actually perform and bring them in to fix what the large, well-connected company had been hired to do.
I got a question for both of you, you and Adam. Are there websites out there where you can link up with?
Yeah, absolutely.
I thought there probably have to, because otherwise how would you do it?
Yeah, there are websites, but a lot of it is just word of mouth, especially if you live out in Silicon Valley where all of that type of work is concentrated in such a small area that people just get known for what they've done. And so, like you said, you have to do a good job because your reputation is everything. So it's a big portion of the economy, and it's a big portion of really highly skilled labor as well. So I just wonder to what degree it's being captured in our jobs numbers, and our participation rate especially being as low as it is.
Wow.
Yeah,
Once again, the great opportunity to trust but verify.
That's the truth. I've heard that somewhere.
Gentlemen.
Marshall, would you like to take a shot at our trivia?
I'll try a wild guess. How about
28? You're a bit high, but still a good guess.
So we have a bracket.
Yep.
It's above below, zero and below 28.
Yeah, and I'll take it within one time either way. So you know it's below 27.
You're reasonably close, though. Not a bad guess for a first one.
Thank you, sirs.
Take care of yourself.
See you later.
All right. Talk to you soon.
Thanks for the call, Marshall. That was really good. And
yeah, he's a good friend of the show.
He is.
And a good friend of our business. Marshall, for those of you who don't know, is a reverse mortgage specialty. And we will be talking further about the reverse mortgages on later shows because, man, they're getting cool now.
Yeah, that's a topic that's going to take up multiple shows because it is very in-depth. So,
indeed.
Do you want to tell us a little bit more about the Humane Society?
Yeah, we can do that right now. It'll be fine. Loyal listeners, hopefully all of you, have been hearing about the Humane Society in their building project for the last couple of weeks. They have, back in 2007, they had a major fire, basically destroyed the place. So without even moving off of the grounds, they were able to keep the place going using portable buildings and such. Well, they have since built an animal hospital that is absolutely world-class, state-of-the-art, beautiful. We have toured the whole thing, Now the big phase is coming. The portables are going bye-bye in favor of a $15 million expansion on the grounds out on Beach Boulevard. And I've seen the drawings. They're fantastic. You have an opportunity here for another short time to help. And if there's anybody out there who's not an animal lover, don't listen. But don't call me either. So we only like animal lovers. Who isn't an animal lover? Anyway, the $15 million has so far been funded to the point of about $8.5 million. And remember now, the Jacksonville Humane Society is a nonprofit. I believe it's the second oldest nonprofit in the state of Florida. They're not getting money from the government, period. I've asked Denise point blank, how much do you get from the government? Zero. It's funded by you, me, and some very generous people like Linda Stein, which brings up the opportunity we have right now. The Steins have been generous to a fault almost already, and they have now pledged $1 million matching fund. Every dollar you give, they will match a dollar. That doubles your impact. Now, this particular weekend, there's yet another impact. This is, they've got a lot of inventory right now. Know another name for inventory there?
Puppies?
Yeah, furry friends, cats and dogs. So this, they have designated this weekend as a free adoption weekend.
Nice.
Which, by the way, it always is for military, past and present, but this is for anybody. This would be the weekend to go over there and look around and find yourself a new companion. So I had a thought on that. How about if you are up for adopting and helping at the same time, you go over and adopt a pet free and take all or part of the money that you would have paid to get the pet, stick it in their building fund, have Linda Stein match it, and you've got a triple whammy weekend going on.
That sounds like a great idea.
We can talk a little bit from personal experience, too. A lot of the dogs that have come and gone in our family, died of old age and such, have been rescue dogs from the Humane Society. And to a dog, they have been fabulous. I've seen them over there. I've taken the tour. Anybody who wants a tour, just show up. And if you want to keep an eye on this project and how it's going, they have a Facebook page. And on that Facebook page, which I believe is the Jacksonville Humane Society, and correct me if I'm wrong, it's in my notes somewhere. On that Facebook page, they're going to have a progress deal where you can see what's going to be built, what's been built, what stage of construction they're in, hopefully how the funding is going for the project right now. But if you want to do your part, and I hope everybody does, go over there, call, log onto the Facebook page, consider adopting this particular weekend for free and then giving a little bit more than you would otherwise. It is a wonderful cause. It's happening, and they're not going to make up this difference without your help. So it's very, very important that they get this thing done. It'll be an asset for years and years to come. All right.
All right. Well, speaking of Facebook pages, we also have one. We're at facebook.com/VanWeFinancial. And on there, you can actually book a meeting with us. And our first meeting is always free. You get an hour of our time. And whether or not we decide to do business together, I can promise you that we will try to have you leave the meeting more informed than when you came in. How about that?
That's one promise that I think we can actually make and keep every time.
Yeah. So also in our day jobs, we are certified financial planners. We're located in Jacksonville Beach, right off the Marsh Landing Parkway exit of Butler Boulevard. So it's really easy to get to from anywhere in town. You can always call our office at 904-685-1505. And if you want to find us online, besides our Facebook page, we have a website. It's VanWeFinancial.com. And we're also on Twitter at VanWeFinancial. And you can email us at info@VanWeFinancial.com. So that is our day jobs.
And our location, by the way, one story, parking right there, easy access and egress. You can get to Butler, A1A, anything like that within just a couple of seconds. It could not be easier.
Yep, and lines are open, so give us a call today at 222-TALK, 222-8255. You're listening to the Van Wee Financial Hour.
VanWee Financial is a registered investment advisor. Information presented is for educational purposes only and does not intend to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. Investments involve risk and, unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Be sure to first consult with a qualified financial advisor and or tax professional before implementing any strategy discussed herein.
Let's get back to the VanWee Financial Hour on AM 600 and FM 100.3, The Answer. To be a part of the program, call 222-TALK. That's 222-8255. Once again, here's Stephen and Adam VanWee.
Welcome back. This segment of the VanWee Financial Hour is brought to you by Robinson Landscape and Maintenance, because we live in Florida and things grow and you need to do something about it.
So, I know where he is.
I believe he's headed to my house.
Well, yours and mine.
All right, then. Yeah, he's a hard worker. Saturday morning, sometimes Sundays, he does what it takes.
Well, when you get a rainstorm on Monday and Tuesday, you're going to be guaranteed you're going to be working on Saturday.
No doubt. Anyways, call Troy at 662-9794. And he is all about service.
Yeah.
All right. So, welcome back. I am Adam VanWee.
I'm Steve VanWee.
And this is the VanWee Financial Hour. Lines are open. We are at 904-222-8255. That's 222-TALK. Sorry about that. Anyways, you have something about real estate in an IRA you wanted to talk about.
I do, but I want to make an announcement first. Many of you who listen to the station a lot know that at 8 o'clock on Saturday mornings, there is a law firm that does a show about all kinds of fun things about the law. And a lot of you have probably heard Mitch Davis both on that show and on our show. And Adam will be gone in 2 weeks for a Saturday, and Mitch is going to join me. So I'm giving you a two-week notice. Get your legal questions together because, hey, free lawyer.
Hey, free legal advice. That is not something you get very often.
You can't beat that one. And he's pretty well tested of all this, too. So you can trust what he's going to tell you. But speculation in real estate is so, you know, in 2006, the bubble burst, prices went down, and all those real estate flippers were stuck with condos and homes that became worth less than their purchase prices. Well, guess what's happening now? All those flipper shows are coming back on TV, and people are buying like crazy and
they're
fixing
everywhere.
Them up. The interest rates are good. Prices are rising. It's just coming back like it never even happened. If you watch Bob Massey on Fox, you know, the American Dream is back, that whole thing. And it always gives rise to the same old question. I'd like to buy this house in my IRA. And we always look at the people like they're from Pluto. You haven't heard why this is not necessarily a good idea? Well, sit down, because you're going to hear it. You're going to hear it right now. There are a lot of things you can't buy in an IRA. Real estate is not one of them. However, it is not the easiest thing in the world to buy in an IRA. IRS has a publication, 590, that explains the rules for what you can and can't buy. And you will not find real estate in there, but you'll find a lot of restrictions. So if you're going to think about putting the real estate in a tax-deferred account, an IRA, then listen. I'm going to tell you some things that might change your mind. IRAs are usually held at banks, credit unions, insurance companies, brokerage firms, mutual fund companies, things like that. Most of those companies will not hold your non-traditional asset. And what that means is real estate, gold coins, that kind of thing. So you will have to find a custodian for these things who deals specially in this. Is it a problem to find? Absolutely it is not. You can Bing it. I used to say you can Google it, but since I found out that the Google guys are playing some dirty tricks politically, you can Bing it now. So I changed my search engine to Bing, but I digress. Anyway, if you Bing it and say IRA real estate custodians, you'll turn up several. I tried it and they're all over the place. So you have to get one of them. The one thing that they all have in common is that they're expensive.
They are very expensive.
You are not going to get through this inexpensively, period. The biggest problem, which might turn into the second biggest problem, but the biggest problem has always been the prohibition against self-dealing. What that means is that you as an individual and your lineal family members are prohibited from doing business with your IRA. The self-dealing penalty is very simple and very severe. boom. It's no longer an IRA. It's 100% taxable right now. Self-dealing prohibits you from engaging in actions such as occupying any part of the property, guaranteeing a mortgage, selling, renting, or buying to or from yourself, or personally realizing any economic or financial advantage. These prohibitions apply also to your family members. But let's look at some of the other economics of the thing. There is no depreciation deduction. Anyone who has bought real estate as an investment knows that the true benefit for the cash flow in your real estate ownership comes from your depreciation deduction against your other income. Since it's an IRA, it doesn't pay taxes. Therefore, you get no depreciation. So your cash flow is your cash flow, period. That means you are totally responsible for everything that happens in there. You're not going to get any other benefit. Now, I should note that raw land is not depreciable. And that could make it more interesting for an IRA investor to own raw land than it would for developed land. But raw land also generates no income, does have property taxes, and it may not improve your overall investment results. Another one, lack of diversification. Depending on how big your total IRA assets are relative to the property you're looking at, real estate might consume the bulk of the assets, leaving the account undiversified. Now, there is no guarantee that a non-diversified account will underperform a diversified account in any given time period, but our experience tells us that over the long term, diversification is critical to investment success. How about the capital gains treatment? We all know that if you hold a property for over a year and sell it at a profit, that profit comes out in capital gains treatment. Well, in an IRA, everything that comes out of the IRA is taxed at your marginal ordinary income rate. It does not matter if you've held it for 6 months or 25 years. It's going to come out taxed as ordinary income. Plus, if you owed it the other way, there's some other taxes. But I'm not talking about that right now. The long-term capital gains rate ranges from 15% to 23.8% for most people. But the marginal tax rates pretty much start at 25% and go up for most people who have enough money to do something like this. So, unfortunately, every withdrawal from the traditional IRA is going to be taxed at your higher ordinary income rate unless you time it really well. But no income taxes would be due, of course, if your IRA is a Roth IRA, which may make Roth investors a little more palatable for all the things I'm talking about, but then again, you still have all of the other problems. Now, here's the rub. IRS is on the rampage, and they have been for a while now, and I'll tell you why. The baby boomers a few years ago started to turn 65, 6, 7. There's 10,000 to 12,000 of us a day, by most estimates, who are out there. I'm about to add to their numbers turning 66. But now we're getting old enough, having been born in 1946 to 64, that's what defines the baby boomers. We're getting to the age now where we're starting to turn 70. And when you turn 70, you're inevitably, if you're lucky, going to turn 70 and a half. When you turn 70 and a half, you have something called a required minimum distribution. That money has to come out of your IRA holdings. So if you have an IRA that's heavily weighted in real estate, and you don't have enough money in your other IRAs to cover the whole required minimum, you got a cash flow problem. The second part of that, and what the IRS is really cracking down on now, is valuations. If you have a real estate IRA or a gold IRA, what is the value of that on December 31st? Pretty easy with gold. That's got a market price. Pretty easy with silver. Same thing. Very difficult when you've got real estate. That is going to start requiring appraisals to be done, because IRS is not going to accept your word for the value of this house if they've got a big old RMD that they want to come out of there. So once you determine the value, and you have to take about 4% of it when you're 70 and a half, you have to take out in cash. Where's that cash coming from? Unless you can withdraw it from another IRA, it's got to come from that house. What if that house isn't spinning off enough cash so you don't have it? Can you put more cash in? No, you're 70 and a half. You can't contribute anymore. There is no means by which your cash flow is going to improve except to roll over money from a different IRA into there or cover the tax bill from the other side of it. That means you may have to sell it. Can you sell it to yourself? No. Can you sell it to your kids? No. Can you up the rent? Probably not. There is no way that you are going to generate that money. And the penalty for not taking that RMD in a timely manner is 50% of what it should be.
Ouch.
If you got a $400,000 house, you're going to have to get $16,000 out of that IRA somehow, or it's going to cost you another $8,000 plus the regular taxes. And you don't really want to get into that. Consider very carefully if you're looking at buying real estate in your IRA.
Well, those are some really good points, and I will definitely take that into consideration when I'm not buying real estate in my IRA.
I don't care in which account I don't buy real estate.
All right, you are listening to The Answer, AM 600 and FM 100.3. We still have a trivia question out there. It's how many times has the Dow closed over 18,000 only to fall back below? And it's a big number, folks, so keep
on
listening. Less than 28. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour.
My next question would be, and how many more times is it going to do it? But it would be hard to be right on that.
Yeah, but it would be hard, but I bet it's a big number, too.
It's a big number.
And the way things are going.
You talk about glass ceilings, that's a numerical ceiling.
And absolutely. So I'm going to get a little bit tongue-in-cheek. I have this piece I call Global Warming is Ruining Life. And it's, well, listen and find out. It's really interesting. A couple Sundays ago, I was enjoying a beautiful and pretty mild day over on Atlantic Beach, and unfortunately, a young man was attacked by a shark about a mile away in Neptune Beach. Very sad. Felt horrible for the kid. He was doing the same thing I was doing at the time, which was surfing. And I, you know, the first thought I had when I heard about it wasn't why it happened. Obvious why it happened. He was in their territory. Every time you go in the ocean, you know that. Especially as a surfer, you have to be very aware of your surroundings, and there are certain times and certain conditions you don't want to be in the water. That wasn't one of them, but it happens.
Seeing a lot of chum around, you want to...
Exactly, and right before it gets dark out is when they feed, and there are just certain rules that you follow and are aware of. Anyways, it is scary, but the fact is you have a much higher chance of dying or getting injured in the car on the way to the beach than you do once you're actually in the water getting attacked from by a shark. It's just, your odds are just not there. It's not going to happen. That being said, imagine my surprise when I read that this attack was due to global warming. And I will put a link to the article that actually shows this on our blog when I post this on Monday. So not only that, but this article also said that this could lead to as many as 100 shark attacks this year. And what's the logic behind it? Well, they didn't explain that part. So it's just a blanket statement that global warming is responsible for the 100 shark attacks that will happen this year.
If you say it often enough, it's true.
Yeah. So this amazing piece of information got me thinking about what else is caused by global warming. And I wondered if any of it was beneficial. So I did some research. And I made a list of the most ridiculous events that are being attributed to global warming. And remember, at this point, right now, the temperature of the Earth has risen 0.87 degrees Celsius in the last 100 years. So we're talking about less than 1 degree Celsius. So in 2015, a California Democrat predicted that global warming will create a surge of prostitution. In 2014, the Huffington Post claimed that climate change helped the rise of ISIS. In 2006, NBC claimed that global warming was creating more and itchier poison ivy. In 2015, global warming was found responsible for the gender changing of lizards. In 2015, the UK Daily Mail claimed that global warming was causing planes to spend up to 11 minutes more in the air. In 2007, global warming was blamed for more early marriages in Uganda. Also in 2007, a mass of poisonous jellyfish attacked a fish farm in Northern Ireland. Can you guess what the culprit was?
Yeah.
Apparently, fish are divided on the issue, though, as in 2008, global warming was blamed for fish decreasing in size in January. But apparently it had worked itself out by July when it was reported that global warming was now causing tuna to increase in size.
Okay.
In just 2 years, as this article was written in 2008, Europe needs to prepare for a flood of climate migrants to a number in the millions due to global warming. And in 2007, National Geographic warned that hurricanes had doubled due to global warming. apparently they had not seen this report from earlier in 2007 that the wind shear created by global warming was going to sap hurricane strength.
There's that.
My point, while being tongue-in-cheek, is how can people be expected to believe any theories when about global warming when it's being used as a universal catch-all for the liberal agenda? Not to mention that there are certainly a global phenomenon of this magnitude can only be responsible for negative outcomes. That just doesn't make sense. There has to be some positives to it also.
Food production, anyone?
It's just statistically impossible. Well, I guess the good part is we will have bigger tuna and more beach days in North Florida, and someday my house might be oceanfront. So we've got that going for me.
But the real reason it's important to everybody out there is that this country, if we don't vote well, is going to spend an inordinate number of our tax dollars fighting this hydra that doesn't really exist.
So when I post that blog, I have links to all of those articles that I cited in here, and they're really, really funny if you want to go take a look.
Okay. All right, we're going to play a little game here. It's called, If I Told You This, Would You Buy?
Okay.
All right. I'll invest your money, and your returns will be guaranteed and reasonable. Would you buy?
I guess I'd be interested. What's reasonable?
Okay, how about in the next stock market crash, you won't lose a penny?
I like that.
Thought you would. When the market goes up, you'll make money.
I like that.
It's linked to the stock market performance, such as the S&P 500, which over time has gained about 11% annually.
It's linked to it. What does that mean?
I won't tell you that.
Oh, okay. Well, you still have my interest.
Okay. You can't outlive your money.
I like that.
Okay. That's how annuities are sold. What I just did with you, I got you on board by telling you all the stuff that would make you want to invest your money like this. What if I told you the rest of the story?
I probably wouldn't like it.
This is an equity index annuity with an insurance company.
Okay.
There's no requirement that I consider what's best for you over what's best for me. I can suggest any annuity I want to, even if it's the one with the biggest commission.
Don't like that.
I didn't think you would. I don't have to tell you, this company that I'm representing, this insurance company, I don't have to tell you what their financial condition is.
Oh, that's really bad.
Once you buy this, your money is tied up for many years unless you pay a really big surrender penalty.
Well, what if I need it?
Surrender penalty. Mm. The most your account can go up in a year is capped, sometimes 5-6 right in there. Even if the S&P 500 goes up 26%, you only get the capped amount.
Hmm.
No matter what, you don't get any dividends. 25% of the long-term gains, 25 to 30% in the S&P are made up of dividends. You don't get any, no matter what. When the investment starts to pay monthly income, you can't get your money out anymore. Period.
Wait a second.
The value of your account is dependent on the value of the stock market on one predetermined day every year. Could be June 11th every year. So it could go way up, could go way down, but that's the only day that matters to you. Following bad market years, your future increases will have to be offset by the gains of subsequent years before you get any credit.
Hmm. This is sounding worse and worse.
The ending value when you die is guaranteed to be zero.
Well, that's true with any annuity, so I kind of knew that going in.
You can change that, but you pay for it. If you want your beneficiaries to have anything left if you die early, you pay for that inside the annuity every single month that you're alive, which means you get a lower payout if you annuitize.
And it's only for a certain amount of years.
Right. Your monthly payments will not be adjusted for inflation, so 20 years from now, your purchasing power will be eroded dramatically.
Hmm.
So if I've talked you out of the sale I just made up at the top of this page, that's what's going to happen on January of 2018 when the new fiduciary standard hits the annuity industry. Now, the unfortunate part is it's only going to hit it in the IRA sector. They're getting away with it further, so far anyway, on the non-IRA accounts. What bothers me more than anything right now we always say it's not the annuity we don't like, it's the way they're sold. What bothers me even more than that is the people who are fighting the new fiduciary standard are conservatives.
Yeah, it's the strong lobbies up in Washington that are behind that, and it's just terrible.
Get out of the way, Paul Ryan. Let the people be well served by fiduciaries. We are fiduciaries, and we wear it proudly.
Absolutely. Always have been, always will be. So that is about the end of our show, but anyways, the number of times the Dow has crossed over 18,000 only to fall back below is 18 times. Do you believe that?
I'll bet you right now we've got at least six more to go before it stays up.
I would take that bet. Well, thanks for listening today. This was Steve and Adam Van Wee. We are the Van Wee Financial Hour. You can always call us in the office at 904-685-1505. Our first hour is always free, so we hope to see you there soon. And have a great weekend. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour.